This episode of Well Met is brought to you in partnership with Lenovo Gaming and Intel. You can find out more about Lenovo Gaming on Twitch, Twitter, and Facebook at Lenovo Gaming or visit lenovogaming.com.
You're listening to Well Met.
Well Met.
A Hearthstone podcast brought to you by BlizzPro.com.
Well Met.
Hey everybody, welcome to a very bittersweet episode 91 of Well Met. We are a Hearthstone podcast brought to you by BlizzPro.com. Today is December 26, 2016. Hope you had a happy holiday. From Denver, Colorado, I'm John Horstman. With me, of course, is the crew. First and lastly, for the last time ever, let's go to Saskatoon, Canada. Say hello to our good friend, Kevin Hovdestad. Hey, Kev.
Hey, John. Yeah, I won't beat around the bush because I know we've been kind of teasing bits and pieces of things off and on for a long time. And anybody who's been chatting with me online or following me on Twitter already knows. So today is my last show. We decided to do one kind of special last Well Met while I was still around before the end of the year, because I have accepted a position on the esports communications team at Blizzard.
Yay! Where's my thing? There it is. There it is. We got it. Whew. Extra long. Okay. Yeah, we're happy for you, man. That's a huge, I've known how hard and how long you've been working in the industry and how you've kind of always wanted to end up over at Blizzard. So that's really exciting. It could not have happened to a nicer person who is Canadian and corrects me weekly. So but besides that,
time.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I remember it was roughly 3 years ago, Kevin, when you approached me and wanted to write for BlizzPro. And that was like one of the first things that you told me is that you wanted to end up over at Blizzard and work there. So it's been a long 3 years, but you did it. And I'm extremely happy about that. That you were finally able to get there.
Extremely happy. Indeed. And that says a lot from JR, because it's just salt, raining salt in Kansas City. JR, how's your week been otherwise, though?
I'm just glad to be in the land of internet and cell phone reception.
Yay. Yes.
Because the last 3 days, my mother-in-law lives out like in the middle of nowhere, and we go out there for the holidays, and it's just her internet speed there is like less than a megabit a second download, and it only works like maybe 10% of the time anyway.
Ugh.
And I get no service whatsoever, thanks T-Mobile out there. So no service, nothing. So I don't even get my text messages until we're almost an hour and a half driven away from there. And then all the text messages start coming in that I missed those few days. It is. It's just horrible, guys. Like, it's so boring.
Welcome back to the world of connectivity. You can't even play Super Mario Run because you need an internet connection, right?
I couldn't do anything. Dang, couldn't do anything.
Man. Literally couldn't do anything.
Yeah. It's like, brutal. I learned very quickly when there is no internet, that I have to like talk to people.
And the worst.
It's the worst.
The worst.
So, total sidebar, but funny story. The Canadian government is actually working on making internet access a human right up here. Minimum of 50 megabit per second internet access is going to be considered a basic necessity.
Yeah, but they're trying
to put that in law.
You're not going to be living there anymore.
I know. I'm not exactly moving
just
somewhere
in
with no internet
leave.
Access.
Yeah. Although it's basically in California, I would expect you can get some pretty good internet speeds out there. Get that Google Fiber going right away.
Ugh. Yeah, Irvine's getting Google Fiber, isn't it?
Supposedly. I don't know where that's at with the like quasi cancellation of the fiber project from Google.
That's
so
true.
It's hard to say. I hope so.
That. Oh, that was
still
so
the
good.
Best service. Still the best service I've ever had, though.
I hope they finish it, right? Like that's.
Yeah, I've only heard amazing things. We should probably talk about some Hearthstone, though, because, well, it's a Hearthstone podcast, believe it or not, and will continue to be even after Kevin is gone. We will continue holding on to the podcasting Hearthstone torch for you, Kev, as we go into 2017. We will have Tannen joining us next week for his first ever Well Met as a permanent co-host. You can follow him on Twitter at TheTannenGrace. He's a really funny dude. He's always tweeting interesting stuff. We're really excited to have him. And the week after that, there may be no show. I am going to be in Hawaii. And, well, I don't like podcasting with my shirt off, but I'll be at the beach all day. So we don't have much of a choice. It's one of the two, and JR has insisted that I keep my shirt on. So we may or may not have a podcast, but
well, I podcast without pants, so it's fine.
Well, of course, that's why that's why you'll notice every week I have to tilt the camera up on JR just a little bit more because he keeps
and everybody thinks chair.
Yeah,
everybody.
That's what it is. Well, let's talk about our weeks in Hearthstone and what we've been up to. Kev, I'll let you go first.
Sure. Yeah. So I've talked a bit on previous episodes about the little tournament I've been playing in. It's kind of been on hold for the holidays. So instead, I actually spent some time over the holidays just messing with Arena. I thought it would be interesting to see kind of what the Arena meta was like post Mean Streets, because I haven't played much Arena in the last little while. I played a bunch right after Old Gods came out. Same kind of thing. I just wanted to see what it was like. Arena is a very different beast right now. Like, it's surprising to me to find that, like, classes that you would think you would see very little of because they didn't get much in Mean Streets are super scary good on Arena right now, because with the recent set weighting, and so for anybody who doesn't remember, the most recent set that's come out gets a bonus weighting in how often those cards are offered in Arena. That pushes a lot of the really like premium removal cards out from classes like Mage. You're not seeing the same volume of Flamestrike or Firelands Portal or some of that stuff because they're getting offered the new stuff, right? So you see a ton of like Cabal Lackey and Potion of Polymorph, which is not as useful. And so there's other classes like Paladin of all classes that were just killing it on the Arena runs that I did. And I only did maybe like half a dozen, and most of them I finished with like between 5 and 8 wins. It's pretty average, like break even point in terms of like infinite Arena, I think is 7, but yeah, no, just crazy. Like the grimy goons mechanic, even though it seems really awful, on a like regular use case for ranked, is scary, scary powerful in Arena, especially the ones with Paladin where it hits your whole hand. Like if you can get a couple of copies of Smuggler's Run in your Arena deck, that's insane how much value that creates in Arena, because all of a sudden all of your minions trade way better, and minion trading is what Arena is largely about, right? So yeah, crazy. So it's fun, but I think it actually is probably the hardest Arena meta to learn in recent memory, because the classes that I thought would be great, like I played Mage the first time, terrible. I played Warrior thinking that with all the cool core like commons for taunts and stuff it would be great. Nope, not at all. Like, you're not getting a ton of Bloodhoof Brave like you were right after Old Gods. You're getting a ton of nothing is the problem. So yeah, that was my week.
Nice. Converting to an arena player now that you don't have to talk about Constructed every week. I get it. There it is. JR, what about you? I know you've been Wi-Fi-less, so I'm guessing not a whole lot of consistent Hearthstone.
Not a whole lot before I left, but before I did leave, between the show and I got to play a few more days, still playing Reno Lock with a little bit of Aggro Shaman built in when I get irritated that my Reno Lock stuff's not working correctly. I'm like, okay, I got to get a few more wins. I'll play Aggro Shaman because I do think right now that I've been swaying back and forth on what I feel the best deck is right now. And last week, I think I said Reno Lock. I'm swinging back towards Aggro Shaman right now. Sure. But I got up to rank 2 is where I am at right now. So I'm hoping that now that I'm back and on a stable internet connection, I can make a push before the new year. So nice. We'll see what happens. But I'm probably just going to try push through Reno Lock and try to get that. I might once if I do hit Legend, I want to start taking a stab at Miracle Rogue.
Yeah.
And start learning that a little bit more.
Too. That one's next on my list to learn. I really want to. I snuck up to rank 3 this week. So, yeah, not too bad. Nice. I've been playing a mid-range shaman list. That's kind of cool. It's got an Alakir in there. It runs, you know, the normal Jade package. So you can actually, like, against Reno Lock, you can, you know, start spitting out 4/4, 5/5, 6/6 Jades on top of Azure Drakes and things from below. And it's just a really menacing deck that
I've been seeing that a lot more often last week.
Yeah, I know Ray, Immortal Lion, and Corksitron all are running that in like top 10 Legend right now. So it's a very good deck. It's definitely more difficult to play than the other mid-range variants or the aggro variants, because a lot of it is deciding how much you're committing to your board. The when you're trading is very important. You know, you're one bad trade away from losing your board a lot of the times, but when you trade correctly and, you know, don't overload your board like you want to do when you're like aggro shaman, it's just insane how good it is. I beat a Reno Mage and a Reno Warlock today in Fatigue, I think. And since I started running it, I'm like an 87% win rate. I went from like 5 up to rank 3, 1 or 2 stars in an afternoon. So it was pretty sweet. So it's been a lot of fun. I've been enjoying Hearthstone. I'm going to try to make the push to Legend as well. We'll see how that goes. But let's jump into the news, shall we?
This Week in Hearthstone, Heroes of Warcraft.
All right, before we get started, we do want to thank our friends of the show, Albert T, The Real Ben, and Coral. Thank you so much for your support of Well Met Podcast. If you want to find out how you can support the show, head on over to patreon.com/wellmetpodcast. Take a look. I think we're going to look at making some enhancements early 2017, which should be pretty fun. So stay tuned for that, and let's talk about what's been going on this week. So first, we had a wonderful time talking about Hearthstone's newest advertising spot, Let's Take This Inside. And, well, they kind of shut it down and released a new
supposedly
one. Yeah, supposedly.
Because I did see it this weekend.
Yeah, it's to be fair, there's probably a lot more going on. But long story short, we have a second one, regardless on what's going on with the first one. Kev, you want to take us through this wonderful advertising spot?
I mean, I guess depends how much there is to say. It's the new 30-second ad. The old one, obviously, everybody, I think, saw and didn't necessarily love with the guacamole bit. This one is now two people who are upset about the noise level in a library. I have no idea what characters they're supposed to be when they start going into their, like...
Abusive, like, Sergeant is the only one I got.
Oh, Abusive Archie Sergeant. Squire. Okay, Archie that makes
Squire
sense.
Is one of them. She's Archie Squire.
All I'm saying is like, it's like fifth grade cosplay is what it looks like. And I will say it's less worse, I think, that's my you're not wrong now, is less worse. It is less worse than the last one was. I still think they've maybe, like, and it's the same thing we said last time. Obviously, I'm not the target demographic. I don't know, like, what audience they're trying to get to. And I know that advertising mobile games, which they are specifically pushing it as a phone game, because that is where a lot of their revenue comes from, it's very difficult to talk to people about a mobile game and actually get them interested in it without showing them something very brief and not a lot of actual gameplay, because it doesn't look like much on a phone.
Right.
I don't know. Thoughts?
Meh. Less worse is a good classification, I think. What do you think, JR?
I would agree with that as well. I did see the Guac Boy commercial this weekend with my family, and my brother-in-law asked something about, he's like, is Hearthstone as bad as that ad is?
Oh no.
And I just kind of just pretended I didn't hear him and went on with my zoned out look as we're watching TV, because I was like, I don't want to answer that.
Yeah. Well, you know, whatever. Again, we're talking about it 2 weeks in a row, so they get points for that, at least. Yeah, I guess.
It's on Reddit every single day.
Yeah.
Someone makes a post about it on Reddit every single day. So
it's true. And I love the Guac Boy memes that we've been seeing.
Yeah.
So
yeah, those are actually pretty funny.
Those are pretty funny. I don't know. I'm a fan of those. Well, let's move on then. We won't take too much time talking about the second 32nd spot that was less worse. The full 2017 NA rules have been announced for Hearthstone. And yeah, it's what's going on here, Kev? Can you give us the breakdown on 2017 HCT?
Yeah, so I mean, most of this stuff is stuff we covered when the HCT 2017 overall formula was announced. So we're not going to spend a lot of time lingering on like prize pool or any of that kind of stuff, because that was all discussed previously. The stuff there is to take away from the actual rules, now that we've seen published rules, because they've tried a little bit to refine some of the specifics. We know for sure now how the seasons are going to break down. So you're going to see three seasons of play. Winter runs November through January, spring runs March through May, and summer runs June through August. The top four players from each of the regional playoffs, is what they're calling them, will go to the respective seasonal championship, whether that's winter, spring, or summer. So it's going to be four players each from North America, Europe, Asia Pacific, and China. And then from those seasonal championships themselves, four players, regardless of region, will qualify to compete in the Hearthstone World Championship, which, as a reminder, is not at BlizzCon this year. So BlizzCon 2017 will not play host to the Hearthstone World Championship itself. Now, having said that, it does look like from the dates, there is a strong possibility that Last Call may play out at BlizzCon. So Last Call traditionally has run in like the late summer, early fall, as it had to be done ahead of BlizzCon. With the seasonal events running up until, or the seasons running until August, the summer championship could well actually fall into September between the regional playoffs and the seasonal championship. That's like you earn points towards the summer season up until the end of August on ladder. So it's likely that the actual playoffs won't happen until September, mid to late. And then there'll be kind of a gap, a quiet month in Hearthstone in October, give or take. But then it specifies that Last Call will take place in November, which would line up with BlizzCon. And it would actually be very difficult in some ways not to do it at BlizzCon, because that's such an obvious way to have Hearthstone esports still represented at BlizzCon. And everything that you've earned for points all year, with the exception of the summer championships, will count towards Last Call. And I think that's specifically just so that people who qualify to the summer championship from the regional playoffs don't get an unfair advantage, because that would basically bias anyone who qualified to the summer championship ahead of someone who potentially did well in earlier seasons, and there's no other way to earn points at that point. So it makes a lot of sense. Last Call, like this year's Last Call, the 2016 Last Call, was probably some of the best Hearthstone we watched up until BlizzCon, because it was all of the strongest players from the entire year. And if they choose to do that as a live tournament, which, again, just given the timing, it seems insane to me that they would put it in November and then not bring it to BlizzCon. Because it doesn't seem likely that they're just going to not speak at all about Hearthstone esports at BlizzCon. So I think that's a really clean fix. It still lets there be a Hearthstone presence at BlizzCon, but it's not the grand finale, and they're not trying to make it, you know, compete for time and attention with, you know, the Heroes Grand Championship and StarCraft WCS finals. Like I think it's a good fix.
Overwatch. So,
and Overwatch now. Overwatch. God, yeah. The Overwatch League likely will have something at BlizzCon. That's going to be nuts. So I think most of the rule stuff here is really clear. The only thing I haven't seen, and I haven't seen if this has been answered somewhere else yet, is whether or not you can earn more points from a second monthly cup. So if you recall in 2016, players could compete in weekly cups for Hearthstone to earn points towards competing in the regional preliminaries. This year, the cups are now monthly. So you only have to do one per month rather than having to do one per week to be competitive, which basically means that it's kind of an even split between playing in one decent sized tournament and your ladder rank. But so you can only earn points from one, but there's no clarity. If you were to compete in two and say you come in, you know, fourth in the first one, but you win the second one, do you get the points from the first one that you earned points from? Or do you get points from the best placement you had? Because I know they're trying to discourage people from competing in multiple by doing it this way, but I'm not clear. There's nothing in the rules that I've seen that clarifies that point. I don't know, guys, did I miss anything?
I think the most interesting thing to me personally on this is the fact that there are some like very specific dates kind of pointed out. You know, they say a specific date and then like in or around this date. For example, the championship date is in or around January 21st, 2018. That was a very, I saw that and I'm like, that is a very specific date on there. But then also like, since they're for someone that is interested in like the release dates of future content and them lining up this tournament with those release dates, because that's kind of the reason they went with this format to begin with, you're looking at like, you know, May 1st, August 1st as, you know, kind of the cutoff times and things like that, so we can have a pretty decent understanding of when we're potentially going to see new content get released this next year. And to me, that those are the type of things for me that I have been super interested in, and seeing these very specific dates pointed out in this document.
Right. And so when we talked about the original announcement about how they were moving the Hearthstone World Championship, I know we talked about how they wanted to adjust the schedule so that there wouldn't be multiple seasons or multiple tournaments played out in one meta, and then metas that got less or even in some cases little to no competitive play during them. So ostensibly with Mean Streets having come out just earlier this month, we should be seeing the next adventure come out likely in February, in the gap between the seasons, I would think. And that's an interesting thing too. I don't know if you guys caught that in the season breakdown, but we didn't call attention to it earlier. The winter season in the rules is published as being from points from November, December, and January. Spring season is from March, April, May. So there is actually a gap there. There's nothing for February, like February's ranked ladder, as it stands right now, according to the America's rules, will not contribute to HCT points, which is kind of a surprise because there's nowhere they would go. So it's likely we'll see an adventure sometime in February. And then the second set it actually makes a lot of sense, right? Because adventures typically release over 4 to 5 weeks. So if they start in the end of January, they can release an adventure over the course of February and not have any tournaments or point earning happening during that month. And then a non-adventure set will come out sometime likely end of May, beginning of June. And that again can just be dumped all at once. So it won't interfere. There's no gap where there's like multiple metas being played out. And then again, presumably we'll get one more set sometime in the fall, lining up around BlizzCon and Last Call.
Yep.
That'll be the meta that the Hearthstone World Championship will be played in. So yep. You're right. It does kind of play out really organically, but it's interesting to look at things like the gap, where it's pretty obvious from that there's going to be an adventure and it's going to be released over the course of those 4 weeks in February.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have nothing to add about that. What do we have anything else here we want to hit on 2017? No,
not personally. No, I think that's cool. The job, like most of it.
All right. Well, let's jump into this week's meta discussion then.
Beta or join us.
Oh, no.
Yes. The old meta. We're going to jump in. I kind of like, here's what I like doing. Every week we kind of play around with how do we discuss the meta. I like going to Tempo Storm first, and then jumping over to Vicious Syndicate, so you can kind of see the, you can kind of see the way that they contrast each other. So we do have the Tempo Storm meta snapshot. They released it. They dropped it on Christmas, but I am not sure where that date ended up, and it's doing really great loading for me. So yeah. Anyways, let's talk about tier one meta decks on Tempo Storm snapshot. What do we have going on here, Kev?
I'm actually gonna talk kind of tier one and tier two all at once because I think this is interesting. Basically, the Tempo Storm has said tier one consists of Aggro Shaman, Miracle Rogue, Midrange Shaman, Pirate Warrior, and Renal Lock, all of which are very strong, all of which I think you would be hard pressed to dispute that they are being played a lot and that they are very effective. But then tier two, they're only listing four decks. They're listing Reno Mage, which we know from previous week's conversations is very powerful, but being played by a very narrow group of players. Dragon Priest, which is not a surprise to see quite high on the list because it's reliable, but not oppressive. Dragon Warrior, which we've talked about as being kind of a good anti-meta pick. And then Control Warrior. And that one blows me away because Control Warrior right now is getting destroyed all over the place on ladder. Like, it's got so many awful matchups. You would have to, the only reason it should even show up is because it's maybe really, really good in higher legend, where you're seeing primarily Aggro Shaman and Miracle Rogue, or maybe for like tournament meta purposes, but it's not something anybody should be taking to ladder. So the one thing that I did want to call some attention to there is basically what they're saying is the ladder is effectively three classes and some details, right? Because it's Shaman, Warrior, and Rogue are kind of the three that they're calling attention to. And then there's the three Cabal classes all being represented almost exclusively by Reno. So the Dragon Priest list they're showing here is a traditional Dragon Priest, and people kind of waffle between which one they like better, Dragon or Reno. But it's basically, if Reno didn't exist right now, the whole game would be played by Warrior, Shaman, and Rogue. And that to me is absurd. Like, it's that card, Reno alone, is basically holding the meta together right now. And he's the only reason that the top end of the ladder isn't exclusively weapon classes.
I think the biggest takeaway for me on this, though, is one, they moved Pirate Warrior back up to tier one. It was tier two last week. I was kind of surprised to see that, but I have been seeing it played a lot more. But I think the biggest thing is seeing Midrange Shaman and how good Midrange Shaman has kind of increased. And if you look at tier three, you start seeing like Control Shaman and things like that. I think we're starting to see the meta slow down finally. Like, aggro is still really good, but I think you're starting to see, as these mid-ranges start coming into play, it's because these Reno decks are stopping, you know, some of these aggro decks in a way, to the point where, shoot, I am out of cards, I'm out of steam, and Reno's just going to beat me. So how am I going to beat that? I'm going to turn my aggro shaman into mid-range shaman and try to outplay them that way. So mid-range shaman does extremely well against Pirate Warrior and things like that. So I think we're starting to see the meta finally kind of slow down. So we're getting into that stage where right after a new set comes out, everybody goes aggro, and then we're finally starting to maybe get to that place where the meta is starting to maybe just slow down a little bit, and we'll start seeing mid-range get pretty popular again.
Something that I
you guys agree with that?
I do, for the most part. I would. You're not wrong, JR, is what I wanted to say. Specifically talking about mid-range shaman for a second, if you take a look at some of the most popular deck lists in aggro shaman, mid-range shaman, and then what they're calling control shaman, it's a difference of about four or five cards. It's not difficult to go from like the aggro shaman that I'm running now and the mid-range shaman I'm running now and the aggro shaman. You get rid of the four mana 7/7s. You get rid of the lava bursts. You add things from below, Alakir, and everyone else it is. And boom, now you have mid-range shaman. And so they're very close in what they address on the ladder. And that's why I think it stayed so powerful. The front end of my mid-range games are exactly the same as my aggro games for the most part. I still have two Trogs. I still have two Totem Golems. I still have Jade Claws. I still have Spirit Claws. So I think it's really interesting to see how close the shaman archetypes are for each other, but it reminds me a lot of Mage in the sense that their core set of cards right now are super, super effective in multiple archetypes and something that we're seeing more of. And yeah, you know, I can finally beat Renolock now, which is great. And I can finally beat Reno Mage. And so yeah, that was the only thing I was going to add is these deck lists are very close to each other, considering one's aggro, one's mid-range, and one's control.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's worth noting, too, that like we say mid-range shaman, and mid-range shaman means something very different now than it did 6 months ago, because mid-range shaman actually isn't even running a lot of the sort of core defining mid-range cards that we used to talk about, right? Like, they don't run Thunderbluff Valiant at all right now because it's too slow.
But at some point.
That's a likely tech choice that will be made when there's less aggro on the ladder, because it makes sense. It's a really good sustain card against control. But right now, it's all Jade cards. So the mid-range shaman package has swung away from totems and into Jade cards instead, because Jade Claws, Jade Lightning is phenomenally good. And then things like Aya, right? It gives you just kind of enough where it's like you would play Jade Lightning on four just for the four damage, especially since you can throw it to face. And it happens to give you a little bit of board on top of that.
So Jade good. Claws is a weapon. My favorite card so far, by the way, Jade Lightning.
Well, it's like almost a better implosion in some ways, because you can send it face, and quite frequently you're getting a 3/3 or a 4/4 when you play it. Now there's not a ton of Jade, right? You're like, generally you're gonna max out at a 6/6 in shaman, but shaman also doesn't really need that, because they're also over time building up to a free thing from below from Totem Golem and hero powering, most of them not even running Mana Tide or anything that kind of like helps refill right now, because again, they've totally just abandoned the totem package. They run Flame Tongue for trades and Totem Golem because it's Totem Golem. It's weird, but it's kind of impressive how reliable this bizarre, like, it looks like they've slammed three different archetypes together. And because you're right, John, like, the core stuff could just as easily be aggro. It's got pirates, for crying out loud, but between pirates and Jade and totems and Alakir and Ragnaros, like, somehow you have this deck list that's totally viable. So,
and we are starting to see the return of Mana Tide Totem. Orange is actually running a deck list that runs one, and he's trying to add a second. And he said specifically for the Reno matchups, it's just so good, because how does a Reno lock clear a Mana Tide Totem on turn three, especially when you have board initiative, right? You have Shadow Bolt. That's really it. And you don't lose board initiative against Reno in the first 3 to 4 turns as Shaman, especially mid-range. You can as aggro because you get Demon Wrath. But as mid-range, that doesn't happen nearly as often. And it's just really difficult for Reno lists to deal with. So,
and I think we all kind of underestimated how good the Jade mechanic was going to be in Shaman, because we really just assumed that, you know, Shaman was just going to stick with what they knew and just go with that. But the Jade Lotus mechanic has been more than great. In fact, I fully expected Jade Druid to be the go-to Jade Lotus deck, but Shaman is definitely blowing it out of the water.
And Jade Druid, like, across the board, pretty much the most overplayed deck, right? It doesn't actually have strong win rates at any rank at all. It's a lot of fun to pull off, like, the infinite Jade stuff against control. It's neat to be able to, like, cycle super fast with a Gadgets and Auctioneer in the mid game, but it's not good. Like, it is actually just not good. There is some good analysis out there if you want to learn to get better at Jade Druid. One of the ones I really enjoyed was the argument on Competitive Hearthstone, the subreddit, about why you should always use your first one mana spell to get the 1/1 out on turn one.
Yep.
Really good conversation there. Lots to learn from it. But honestly, yeah, Druid is in an awful place. Like, we talked kind of tier one, tier two here, but if you go by Tempo Storm, there is nothing for Druid at all until you get into tier three. And then there's all these, like, you know, Ramp Druid, Jade Druid, Murloc Druid.
I want to know what Murloc Druid is. I have not played against that.
It's a super scary deck when it works. It's basically like a weird kind of, it's like the old fast Druid, and it tries to get a bunch of bodies on the board super fast using Finja. Draw stuff using like Curator, buff them using Zubat, and it's basically fishing for a Savage Roar win using a bunch of early bodies. It doesn't work reliably, right? It's like any other fast Druid list. If you don't pull the Savage Roars, if you don't have draw, you just die because you run out of ability to play cards on about turn six.
Oh, but never sometimes mind. I've played this before.
Yeah, sometimes it just wins, right? Sometimes it just wins games because you innervate out Finja on turn one and the game's over.
Yeah, Finja's so good though. Like, it's such a fun card. It is probably one of my favorite cards in this set, but it doesn't hardly see play because Murloc just isn't usually that great to begin with. But Finja's so much fun.
They don't have enough health typically to stay on the board, and they get traded into way too efficiently with Shaman, and cheap board clear is kind of all over right now for Reno. So it's a really risky one to play. I know Freshka was trying to get multiple Murloc classes and Murloc decks to work, and he just couldn't do it. So even a Murloc Warrior, I believe, for a little bit, sitting around rank two, rank three. So it's interesting, but I think if things continue to slow down, and if Shaman loses some of those trade tools, or some of those trading tools become less relevant, which I don't see that happening, you might see some Murloc decks sneak in there. But that's kind of what it would take, I think, at this point to really be effective in a meta like this, or even a touch slower. Yeah. One thing I wanted to note, I think if Murloc Druid gets announced here, I think that Egg Druid should be here as well. I've been seeing some people do some really crazy things with Egg Druid. Jackie Chan's been holding top 100 with Egg Druid quite a bit. So if Murloc Druid gets a spot on the list, Tempo Storm, so should Egg Druid. But other than that, like, I'm pretty happy. I still don't think Aggro Shaman's number one. I think mid-range Shaman is number one by far. And are they talking more about the slowed down Pirate Warrior here a little bit? Or like the Aggro Pirate Warrior where we've been used to seeing? Looking at the list, it's definitely the Aggro version, double heroic.
Yeah, the list shows the Aggro version.
But
The only thing that's notable about that to me is that people have gravitated to Naga Corsair on four, because that was not an inclusion that you used early on. The original pirate lists didn't run that because they were looking for stuff that was faster, and they didn't want cards that were situational, right? They didn't want something that didn't have charge or didn't do immediate damage. But honestly, a 5/4 for four is a pretty okay play, especially if it's getting anything for buffs from any of your other pirates. And does give a weapon plus one attack when it hits. So there is the potential that that's, you know, valuable on something as simple as an Azoth's First Mate. If you're still holding that stupid hook, like, it turns it into a 2/3 weapon. That's a big deal.
Yep. One more thing I wanted to add. We actually had a couple people point this out last week. And we also, I've been seeing it pop up a lot on Reddit and other online forums, that Tempo Storm and Vicious Syndicate, while they're both meta reports, are very different in kind of what they look to achieve, especially when you look at the raw data. So take a second, realize Tempo Storm is aggregated by experts in each class, and they sit and they basically argue about a tier listing based on playing those classes optimally, right? You're playing those classes correctly and you're seeing the right things on ladder. Vicious Syndicate, on the other hand, just says, here's the data, bro. Here's, you know, 55% win rate for Aggro Shaman at rank 5. This is the best deck that you should be playing, rank 5-1, regardless on if you're playing it optimally or not. Ray was the first one to really kind of explain it, and he's just like, Vicious Syndicate's going to tell you that against Reno Lock, you're sub 45-50%, and I win that matchup 75% of the time at Legend. And so there's a lot of things to consider when you're looking at these matchups that we talk about. I just want to make sure people say that when we say, oh, this deck is a 55% win rate, according to Vicious Syndicate, that's a comment on the actual data that we see and not a comment on, oh, when it's played correctly, Aggro Shaman has a 55% win rate at rank 5. They're very different things. Sorry, I had to PSA that because I don't want people to get confused. I win against Reno Lock all the time. They're different. They are different. Let's talk about Vicious Syndicate. So, Kev, where do you want to start, man?
Well, just to tag on to what you were saying real quick as we switch gears into Vicious Syndicate, I think people also need to be aware that Vicious Syndicate has the opposite problem. It is just the data in aggregate. So you are seeing games that have been recorded by players who have made mistakes, played suboptimally. It's just win-loss. That's all that's being shown here is win-loss. And they have to do some stuff where they have to say, okay, these decks are only different by one card, so we're going to lump them together when we go to calculate the data. Because if these cards are both, if these decks are both Jade Druid and one runs Harrison Jones and one runs an Azure Drake, those are still both Jade Druid, so we'll count them as the same. So there's a little bit of nuance to reading the data, and you're going to see decks that are being pulled down by below average players just as much as you're seeing decks that are being pulled up by above average players. And so it's definitely worth noting that, like, if you go and you look at something like the matchup report by players at Legend rank only, you get a slightly different picture of the information than if you look at the overall data. But having said that, the overall data is where we'll start. I don't think there's anything in here that's a big surprise compared to last week. The classes that are doing really well are still the same across all ranks. The hypothetical best deck is still Aggro Shaman. You're seeing Pirate and Dragon Warrior perform very well. When you start looking at players in the higher end ranks, so go up to rank 5 to rank 1 or even to the Legend rankings, Aggro Shaman maintains its dominance. You see Dragon Warrior rise up to 2nd. Miracle Rogue performs really well at Legend specifically. And the rest of the sort of tier 2 is rounded out by mid-range Shaman, Jade Shaman, which they differentiate in this report. And depending on rank, either Reno Mage or Dragon Priest at rank 5-1, or just the Pirate Warrior deck on rank tier 2 instead of tier 1 when you get to Legend. So no massive surprises. Definitely interesting to watch the decks that kind of fall off as you go up the ranks. You start out and it looks like Dragon Priest should be really good, has an above average batting ratio, and just totally disappears. By the time you get to Legend, it's a tier 3 deck and it's losing more often than it's winning. Whereas something like Miracle Rogue across all ranks is actually winning at an above average level, but it doesn't start to overperform until you get to Legend. On the whole, I don't think there's anything in here that surprises anybody. The classes at the bottom are super consistent all the way across. Paladin, mid-range Hunter, Secret Hunter, C'Thun Druid. There's lots of stuff that just stays at the bottom. Control Shaman, and they're not going anywhere. But I guess to me, the biggest thing is you can take a look at this and certainly still decide what you're going to tech. I think it's still worthwhile to be teching weapon removal, still worthwhile to be teching a little bit of some kind of healing or taunt to stall. That's what I got. What have I missed, guys?
I think you hit it all. The main thing I want to comment on, what I love about the Vicious Syndicate report is the fact that you can kind of look to see where at the rank you are to see what is popular for the rank you're at. And you don't really get that advantage with the Tempo Storm one, because Tempo Storm is just the meta overall, right? Whereas with Vicious Syndicate, you can kind of go by ranks. If you're a rank 1 through 5, what are you going to see more of? You're going to see Aggro Shaman more than Pirate Warrior. But if you go to rank 6 and up, you're going to see Pirate Warrior more so than Aggro Shaman. And that, to me, is one of those things. Like, I tweeted out a few days ago before I went on vacation that I was seeing a lot of Aggro Shaman. Like, I saw like 10 Aggro Shaman in a row. And the comments I got from people are like, well, you're lucky. All I'm seeing is Pirate Warrior right now. And that might be a rank thing, but it also might just be, you know, what we've queued against. Both are seen quite a bit at rank 5 and also rank 6 and above. Yeah. You're just seeing more Pirate Warrior rank 6 and above as people are using that to get their bonus stars and things like that to get to rank 5. And then a lot of times once they get to rank 5, they'll redefine their strategy a little bit and go more for a win rate because you're no longer getting those bonus stars. And then once you hit legend, you're going for, you know, win rates even more. And Miracle Rogue is really the big one right now. Yeah. So that's why you're kind of seeing that difference between ranks. And that's why I love Vicious Syndicate, because you can see the meta for those specific ranks. Whereas in Tempo Storm, you just get it just straight up.
Right. Yeah, and the by rank breakdown stuff is really good, right? Like, if you go in and you look at the low rank distribution, like, what's the second most played class? Yeah, from rank 15 to rank 11. Well, it's Druid, which is just awful. As soon as you go up to, say, rank 5 to rank 1, Druid drops down to 4th and is only narrowly edging out Rogue. When you get to Legend, Druid has fallen off and is 5th. And it's the only reason it's that high is because people are actually switching to teched versions of Druid to beat some of the matchups at Legend. They're going to things like Malagos Druid. So, but I mean, across all ranks, it's just insane to me how the whole game is basically being played by Shaman, Warlock, Warrior, and Rogue. Yeah. I mean, at lower ranks, you see a little Druid, you see a little Priest, but as soon as you hit that rank 5 wall, like, all you're playing against, half of your games or more are going to be against Aggro Shaman, Pirate Warrior, or Arena Lock. That's it. Like, it's those three decks in rotation. And unfortunately, you're seeing them in rotation because they are the rock, paper, scissors of Hearthstone right now. It's not like there's some way you can sneak up the middle and beat them all.
Right. Something, and I'm glad you said that, because basically what I end up using the Vicious Syndicate report for is class frequencies and deck frequencies at where I am. So that I know at rank 3, if hypothetically I'm supposed to see 50% these three classes, what deck can do well against those and do reasonably well against the field, so I have the best chance to win, which is why I started running mid-range Shaman, because it can beat all three of those decks, you know? And so I love the Vicious Syndicate meta report, and it takes a lot of the opinion out of what you hear from people about what's the best, what's the worst, what's being played. But I still love getting that pro opinion. And I don't think I had the appreciation for a pro's opinion until Ray started explaining, like, well, if you're winning 50%, 50-50 against Reno Lock as this faster mid-range Druid, you're just playing it wrong. And everybody's not playing that right correctly. And here's how you mulligan. Change your mulligans to this against that and let me know your win rate in a week. And I'm like, 70-75%. Because there you go. There's a lot to be done and a lot to be said for playing a deck optimally. And knowing when you're not, if you're trying to learn, like JR, if he's trying to learn Reno Lock, he knows he's not going to make the most optimal plays. Mm-hmm. He might go more for the Vicious Syndicate power rankings because his performance is going to be more in line with the performance on Vicious Syndicate. But if he's like Kevin and plays more Warrior than anybody else combined, he's probably looking a lot at Tempo Storm going, okay, what Warrior list is the best? What am I supposed to see at this rank? And making a decision using both of those reports at the same time. So Yeah.
Whew. Yeah, you bring up a good point about something that I think we need to do a future episode on, and that is mulligans. Because that is something that I have been trying the last couple months on getting a lot better at doing, and realizing the matchup as I go into it and knowing what cards I should keep and what cards, you know, I need to drop. Right. And it's different per matchup. Like there might be, because before, I know before, like mulligans, I would just go, I just need a turn one drop and turn two drop and I'm okay. But then, you know, there are times that you're like, well, no, I need to, you know, I'm playing Reno and I'm going up against aggro. I might need to hard mulligan for, you know, Reno and make sure that that is in my opening hand so that I can survive and play this out. And I think that's something we should definitely touch on in a future episode.
Yeah, it's definitely a very difficult skill to learn. And, I, you know, the funny thing is I think most people do the best when they're learning to mulligan when they have a really obvious curve to play to. Like, I think the honest to goodness to date in the entirety of Hearthstone, I think the deck that taught most people the most about mulliganing was actually Secret Paladin. Like super oppressive, unfun Secret Paladin, because people learned really quickly that quite often you actually wanted to mulligan for curve and you needed to make sure that you had, like if you had Piloted Shredder in your opening hand, you wanted to hold it because your odds of drawing something to play on curve leading up to that card were so good, right? But it's sort of like a weird mental exercise. And I think a lot of people just, they get a feel for it without actually understanding the math. And that's the hard part, right? Is a lot of us are doing it based on what feels right as opposed to what is right. And it's hard. It's super tempting sometimes to hold a card rather than fish for something, because everybody's been burned, right? By the, I threw all four of my cards back fishing for this particular card. I wanted a Fiery War Axe in my opening hand. I didn't get it. Instead, I got all my top end. So there's this weird temptation like, oh, I have a three drop in my mulligan. I should keep it just in case I don't draw anything lower, yeah. Right? Like there's all these super feelings driven decisions that are actually wrong. And that's a huge, barrier to overcome. But yeah, I think I'm curious. I want to know from you guys before we move on, based on the Vicious Syndicate stuff, JR, what deck would you take to ladder this week? Like if you were going to go hard before New Year's, what would you take right now?
Well, if I was looking at Vicious Syndicate, I would be thinking Aggro Shaman would be what I need to take, because that is ultimately, you know, the data is showing that that is the correct deck right now at the rank that I am at. But I know that mid-range Shaman is performing better. So that's one of those things where Vicious Syndicate has the data, but it doesn't have the full story. And that's why I think like looking at Tempo Storm and Vicious Syndicate, you know, in tangent is important.
Fair enough. All right. Final answer, mid-range Shaman?
Yeah, I'd go mid-range Shaman. But if was just looking at Vicious Syndicate, I'd be thinking Aggro Shaman.
Mr. Horseman, same question.
I would say mid-range Shaman to JR's point, but since he's already said it, believe it or not, I'm telling people, I would say take Reno Mage. Take Reno Mage. It's got some really, really impressive matchups. The Antonitis with some of those cheap spells to burn down at the end is really interesting, and we're seeing a lot of innovation in deck changes almost daily with this deck. And every day right now, I feel like Reno Mage is getting better and better and better. And I'm not sure if it's stopping anytime soon or it might keep kind of eking up. Right now, the hardest part is, yes, it's a tough matchup, Aggro Shaman, for both sides. And a good Reno Mage should always win against mid-range Shaman or Aggro Shaman, but they don't because it is such a difficult matchup for them. So climbing especially, you'll eke out a lot of wins, but it's really slow. It is such a slow... I mean, if you want 20, 25-minute games, you know, that's great.
Mage. I mean, Reno
right.
Mage.
Right.
It's funny that you say that, because I read somewhere that for people who are serious about getting to Legend, that like the best advice in the game is that if they haven't won a game by like turn 7, they should just concede and move on, because the time it takes to play the extra game to win another one is more valuable to them than slowly winning that game. Like, it's it's funny actually looking at like the metagame advice for aggro decks. And Reno Mage, yeah, I tried playing that deck for a while on ladder. Super good, super powerful. I think it's really easy to get suckered into wasting your burn.
Really unintuitive.
Yeah, it's super. You're like, sure. You're staring down like a 6/6 Jade Golem with a fireball in hand. You're like, I should kill it. And the answer is no, you should never kill it. Like, that burn goes to face 10 times out of 10. But
yeah, it's, yeah, man, it's just a really interesting deck. If you want to see somebody pilot it well and understand the power of Reno Mage right now, Life Coach and Super JJ are streaming it like 12 hours a day on Twitch, and you should just go sit down and watch, listen to them discuss and argue, stand up and yell about the decisions that need to be made in that deck. But it's just, it's a very interesting deck. And if you're like, John, I don't want to play Shaman. I get it, John. You play the best deck because you just want to win. I'm not like that. I'm not going to do that. Well, Reno Mage might be right up your alley. I'm a role
player. I only play Hunter. Yeah.
Yeah, right. I'm a hunter in WoW. I'm a hunter in Hearthstone. I get it. Anything? Can we take a second and talk about Warrior? Well, Kevin, actually, what are you gonna take first?
Good segue. I was gonna say Dragon Warrior. Because interestingly enough, we just finished talking about how there's nothing that really breaks the meta. Like, there's nothing that wins across the board. But if you look at the most common deck lists, I would say the most common deck lists, regardless of rank, are going to be Pirate Warrior, Aggro Shaman, and Reno Lock. And all three of those matchups, all three of them struggle against Dragon Warrior. Reno Lock beats it a little bit, but it's definitely a winnable matchup. But yeah, like, Dragon Warrior beats Pirate Warrior. Dragon Warrior beats Midrange and Aggro Shaman. It does lose to Miracle somewhat, but it beats most everything else of note that you're going to run into. It loses to Reno Mage, so that's a fair argument. But honestly, like, unless you're seeing a ton of Jade Shaman, Dragon Warrior feels really strong right now. I think people are like wildly underestimating it, and there's a lot of variants right now too of that deck. So I actually, while you guys were talking about your decks, that was one of the things I was doing, was scrolling through and looking at the tech choices for Dragon Warrior. Cause yeah, like, I know there are classes and decks that it loses against in theory, but in practice, it just seems like it wins unless you lose because you made an error.
Dragon Warrior reminds me a lot of Midrange Shaman in this meta, where from Pirate Warrior to Dragon Warrior to Control Warrior, there's some key cards that change out, but they're actually kind of close in how they run. And even Dragon Warrior, you've seen them elongate all the way up. I've seen Dragon Warriors run Ragnaros and Grom. And I've also seen them pop out at, you know, the Draconid Crusher, right? The 6/6. Yep. And that's the top. And I've even seen them run the whole dragon package, but run double Arcanite Reaper or one Arcanite Reaper. I think there was a post on the competitive Hearthstone subreddit about someone who ran Arcanite Reaper and Leeroy in their otherwise full-on Dragon Warrior deck. So it's kind of interesting. There's a lot of different variants, I feel like, of Dragon Warrior. They all kind of start, the middle is always kind of the same no matter what. It's the top and bottom of the curve that kind of changes out depending on what you're trying to accomplish. So yeah, I like that pick, Kev. I think all three of these decks, if I were running them, I have a Dragon Warrior variant in case I start losing a lot, you know, running the Curator and
I keep
all that stuff.
Reno Mage on my list just in case. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's there's a lot that can be done. And, you know, there's a lot of decks out there that can win. Just try to determine if you're playing optimally or you're getting or if you're just getting bad matchups. So I think a lot of people want to make the excuse that they lost because the matchup isn't favored and not that they just didn't play as well as they could have. And I run into that a lot.
And unfavored doesn't mean you lose every time. Like right. A deck like Dragon Warrior.
Favored doesn't mean you win every time.
Well, the deck like Dragon Warrior, right? Its worst matchup on Vicious Syndicate lists at about 45% win rate. That means you are still winning 9 games out of 20, right? You're literally losing one more than average. But the win rates on the other side are very similar. Like you're winning 55-60% of the time. That means that you're winning, you know, 11-12 times out of 20. Like you're still going to lose games against decks you think you should be beating, and you're going to win games against decks you think you should be losing to. It happens. That's okay. Like sometimes you get the nut draw, sometimes they do. That's a thing that happens regardless of what deck you play.
Yeah. Just sit back, have fun. And I tell people all the time, and this is something I've been doing with a few of my friends, take screenshots of tough or pivotal turns, send it to friends, send it to the Well Met Podcast Twitter. Or if you're a patron, we've got a Facebook group and we can do a whole what's the play thing where we can sit down and talk about that. That's something that when I told Freshka, I'm like, I want to play a lot more Hearthstone, but I'm not sure where I'm missing it. He's like, start taking screenshots. I'm going to take mine and let's talk about him. And it helps a lot.
People love that stuff.
It helps
like
a lot.
Putting that stuff in like our patron Facebook group where everybody can sit and like discuss and talk about like, okay, what information did you have? What cards have been played? You know, like, cause there's information that's not on the screen and you can talk through like, you know, do you remember the hand state? Which one of these cards has he been holding the longest or like what, how many cards is he still holding from the mulligan? Like it's a super fun exercise and people love doing it. So if you've got screenshots and you want to talk about them, do that for sure. Cause that would be a lot of fun.
Yes. Yes, I do think that is a good place to stop. Let's go ahead and stop. And we've got a thing. There we go. We're doing a new thing. I hit my thing too. Sorry, I'm trying a new setup thing. All right, that's going to do it for us. We need to kind of get out of here and go about our days. But first, Kevin, This is your time to say goodbye. Any last minute rants? Like if you got one more Kevin nugget of wisdom, Kevin's nuggets of wisdom, we would love to hear them before you sign off for the last time.
Yeah, it's strange to be signing off for the last time. I appreciate you guys having me all this time, and I'm very proud of what we did here. I really enjoyed being a part of this. I think we did something really impressive with Well Met, with BlizzPro, like the stuff that we've done, the coverage we've provided, the group that we've cultivated around ourselves for content creators and for an audience. Like I love it. I love the people who interact. I love the people who, you know, email us, tweet us. I've had so much fun doing this. And obviously, I get to go on a pretty cool new adventure and I'm really excited, but I'm going to miss it. I feel bad already. Like I'm going to close Skype tonight. And the next time I open it, it's never going to do this again. Like it's a weird thing. It's a very weird thing. So to both of you guys, thank you very much for everything over the last couple of years. We got to do something really special. And I think over time, we built something that, you know, kept getting better, that kept growing, that everybody enjoyed. And I trust you guys to do that just as well without me. I will continue to listen and look forward to seeing what you guys can do in the years to come. To everybody listening, thank you guys so much for all your love and support. It's meant the world. Hearing the positivity, the feedback, people saying, you do good work, man, keep going. Like, that's why we keep going, and it's why I got to get here and keep going where I'm going. It's been very special for me. Thank you.
I don't even want to talk after that. I just want to let that sit in, let our music just kind of sit there, you know, but we shouldn't. We should close out the show. Thanks, Kev. I said this on the payload, so if you listen to both shows, you kind of already heard me say it, but you know, we're, it's you and I do all of our shows together, right? It's just John and Kevin do a podcast, and it's been a lot of fun being the kind of, you know, the two of us kind of just doing those different shows. And obviously, JR, we've been doing this for a year and a half together as well. And it's just been, it's weird. It's a new chapter, right? And we're really excited to hear from you at Blizzard. And, you know, hopefully you have a lot of cool stories for us when we chat and hang out. But yeah, it's just going to be, we're really excited for you. And we're all bummed to see you leave, but we would be doing you a disservice by not continuing and not doing our best to put out the best shows possible. Because I know that that's what you want, is just be like, make a kick-ass podcast. Dang. So we're going to miss you, friend. And, you know, don't be a stranger. Don't be a stranger. We'll play a lot of Hearthstone still, I'm sure. Some console Overwatch.
Yeah, it's
Overwatch.
Not like I can't keep playing the game.
Right.
If anything, I'm probably going to play more of the game.
All right, JR, yeah, what Kevin, do you got for Kev?
Man, there's been a lot of really good people that have come through BlizzPro, and you are definitely right there with them, and even above some of them, man. Like, when he came here about 3 years ago, I could tell you were very professional, had a goal in mind, and was set to go do it. And you did it, and that is awesome. And it's been a privilege to not only work with you on like BlizzPro in general, but also this podcast and getting to, you know, hang out with you on a weekly basis and stuff like that and become friends. Like, that's the biggest thing, and that's the biggest reason why I do this, is because I have some of the best friends that I have met doing, you know, content creation at BlizzPro and doing these podcasts and things like that. Not only the people that work with BlizzPro themselves, but the people I have met that are fans of the work that we have done. And I just wanted to say, man, I'm super excited to see what you do at Blizzard, and I think you're going to do great things. And I just wanted to thank you for the time that you put in these last 3 years.
Thanks, man. Yeah, it's for anybody else who's listening and thinking about it, I will shill. I like no one has ever shilled before. BlizzPro was the second thing I ever started doing in gaming or esports. I briefly got started with Team Acer when they were doing StarCraft coverage a few months before I found BlizzPro. And then I got to BlizzPro, and BlizzPro opened a lot of very cool doors for me. I got to do a ton of really awesome events. I got to go to the Blackrock Mountain launch party and
Storm
celebration at PAX East as part of BlizzPro's crew. We've done dev interviews and podcasts and streams and all sorts of cool stuff. The group of people is a blast. So if you've ever thought about trying to try your hand at doing that kind of stuff, talk to JR, talk to him and the family, and find out how you can get involved, because it's an awesome thing. And stick around, listen to the show. I'm not going to be on it, but it's going to probably be better for that in some ways. So don't go anywhere. The next episode will be even better.
I, for one, welcome our new Kevin Overlord.
All right. Let's get out of here. Kevin, one last time, what's going on with our Patreon this week?
Patreon. So obviously you guys heard the cool little spiel about Lenovo Gaming and Intel, who are proud sponsors of BlizzPro and the WellMet podcast, but we are still primarily supported financially by our patrons. If you want to help the show grow, give the guys the ability to kind of do more, put on a better stream, continue to host game nights and special events. We've talked a lot over the last couple years about doing a WellMet tournament, and I know I'll be signing up if that happens. So if you want to get into that and you guys want to be involved, you can head over to patreon.com/WellMetPodcast, where you can find out what kind of rewards interest you, but also give back to the show and tell the guys, you know, that you want to see them keep doing this for months and years to come. And this week, we do want to welcome a brand new member to the WellMet family. So to Stuart K, thank you very much. We appreciate your support, and we look forward to chatting with you in our patron Facebook group very soon.
Yeah. He's already been there. We've been chatting with him this week, actually, talking about Miracle Rogue.
Spoilers.
No, it's not. No. No, it's not. It's not spoilers. It already happened.
Hey, we've been misusing that word for like 6 months of the show. We're not going to stop now. God.
All right. Spoiler alert. What do we have going on for iTunes this week, JR?
Yeah, so everybody has been so busy with Christmas and the holidays and not having internet like me that there's been no new iTunes reviews this week. However, 5-star iTunes reviews help us out a ton. If you'd like to give one, I will mispronounce your name on the show next week. So I hope we get a ton. And I just spend like 20 minutes mispronouncing everybody's names. It'll be a good time. Just head over to iTunes, type in, go to the podcast section, type in Hearthstone. You'll find us right there. Just leave a nice little review and I will mispronounce your name and it'll be cool.
I love it. And of course, we do want to thank our friends of the show, Albert T, The Real Ben, and Coral for their support, as our MVPs, Patreons. They're friends of the show. Sorry, MVPs are the payload. That's how that works. Oh, yeah. All right. Let's get out of here. Before we do, let's do some shout-outs, closing remarks for the week. JR, I'm going to let you go first here.
I've already given my shout out to Kevin. So, Kevin, you still have my shout out. Everything I said was my shout out.
Kevin, any last shout outs for you? Did you hit it all from earlier?
I guess to you guys, I feel like, you know, we've been, John, like you said, you and I kind of the dynamic duo. You're the Robin to my Batman. I appreciate that. JR, you could be Alfred. I feel like you would totally nail that role.
I'm Batman, by the way.
I know.
I'm Batman. Got it.
Thank you for that.
Yeah, we got it.
Guys, I'm not going to be on the show anymore. It has been a blast. For those of you listening who do want to stay in touch, please come find me on Twitter at Lack of Realism. Stay in touch. It's not like I'm going to be going anywhere. I'm moving, but I'm still going to be around. I'm still going to be talking about games. Still going to be geeking out about all things Blizzard. And I would love to stay in touch with you guys to hear from you. My DMs are always open. I'm also hopefully once this move is over, so the next month or so is kind of up in the air. All things are going to be a little weird, but with the free nights I'm going to have no longer podcasting, I might do some more streaming. So if you're interested in that, nice. You can also find me on Twitch at Odin TV. That's Odin with two N's TV. Hoping to do a lot of Hearthstone, a lot of Heroes of the Storm over there, and it would be very cool if you guys wanted to come hang out with me while we do that.
Awesome. Oh yeah, that's like the last words we probably just heard from Kevin on the show. Well, Kevin, what do you want your last words to be?
You're not wrong.
There it is. I'm gonna hand it to you at the end, but we're gonna make sure that that's gonna be the last thing you say. All right, as for me, I'm actually streaming quite a bit at twitch.tv/kickedtripod, and I'm actually gonna stream right after the show. So if you want to come on over and hang out, we'll be there at twitch.tv/kicktripod streaming some stuff, and I'm streaming there 5 days a week mainly now that everything's been away and cleared away and all my grades are in, and they were way higher than they should have been. they should not have been that high. They should not have. Humble brag. But in the end, that's where I'm at and all the good stuff, and we're going to be done. Let's be done. Thanks for joining us for another episode of Well Met. You can join us live every Sunday at 7 p.m. Pacific at twitch.tv/blizzpro to get in on the conversation, and follow the show on Twitter at Well Met Podcast for additional news and updates. Well Met is supported by our fans. If you love this show, you can find out how to become a part of the family at patreon.com/wellmetpodcast. You can also find sweet Well Met apparel at store.blizzpro.com. Special thanks to Jake Buttono for our music and Scythe Designs for our graphic design. This has been episode number 99 of Well Met. We will see you next week. And Kevin, say it.
You're not wrong.
Well Met is a production of BlizzPro.com. The show records live at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time at twitch.tv/BlizzPro. To get the latest news and information about the show, follow us on Twitter at Well Met Podcast or join us on our subreddit at reddit.com/r/WellMetPodcast. If you would like to support the show, you can find out how at patreon.com/WellMetPodcast. Yeah.